I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hancock and Kelly on The Voice of St. Louis. Joining us right now is our good friend and CBS News military analyst, Colonel Jeff McCausland, retired U.S. Army. Colonel McCausland, suffice to say, there's a lot going on in the national security and foreign affairs space right now leading into a new administration. What's your take so far?
Well, you got to remember, John, there's an old Chinese saying, may you live in interesting times. That's a Chinese curse. And some might say that's where we are right now. The Trump administration, has made some unbelievable announcements in terms of main nominees for cabinet positions across the government. It's made a couple that were seen to be somewhat traditional. I mean, Mario Rubio, a senator with vast national security and foreign policy experience from his time in the Senate, being selected to be the Secretary of State, seems to be a pretty obvious choice and one that'll be easily confirmed. But obviously, the one I watch is, of course, this pending nomination of Pete Hegseth, a Fox News and Fox and Friends host, to be Secretary of Defense. Is pretty extraordinary. But in the last 24 hours or so, that's even been outdone by making Robert Kennedy Jr. the nomination for Health and Human Services. Somebody said to me this morning, that's sort of like naming a flat earther to be the head of NASA. And then Tulsi Gabbard to be the head of DNI. And then last but not least, and perhaps most extraordinary of all, Matt Gaetz, who's still where he was under investigation by the Ethics Committee of the House for having sex with underage women, that he paid for that and using drugs. And now he's going to be the chief law enforcement officer of the United States.
It's I would dare say that it's unprecedented. Let's go to Secretary of Defense designee, sure, Pete Hegseth. So how non-traditional a pick is this?
Well, it's pretty non-traditional. Like I said, his main background is as a co-host on Fox and Friends, one of Mr. Trump's primary programs that he would watch. He does have military experience. One should certainly acknowledge that. He was a junior officer in both Iraq and Afghanistan. He turned a couple of Bronze Stars, and we should honor his service. But I can tell you from where I sit, that level of military experience has frankly nothing whatsoever to do with being the Secretary of Defense, where you're now going to oversee roughly a $900 billion a year annual budget, 1.3 million people in uniform, probably another 750,000 civilians at multiple hundreds of locations all around the world. And you're going to have to deal right at the moment with two major wars in the region of the Middle East and, of course, the war in Ukraine, growing threats from China, growing threats from North Korea and Iran, real questions about the defense budget, which for the current year still hasn't been passed by the United States Congress, and questions about rapidly increasing costs for our nuclear modernization program that's ongoing, and then arcane things about should we pursue an arms control negotiation with the Russians despite our current unpleasantries with them, because if we don't and the current agreement expires as it's supposed to in 2026, then we'll be on the path to a nuclear arms race, which will be unbelievably destabilizing and unbelievably expensive for everybody. So in either case, do I see Hegseth having the vast national security experience that we have seen in previous secretaries of defense or vast significant corporate leadership experience in running a large-scale organization? Because ultimately, the Pentagon is perhaps the biggest corporation on the planet.
Yeah, and, you know, the subsequent appointments of Gabbard and Gaetz and RFK, I think, make confirmation for a guy like Pete Hegseth more likely than perhaps...
Absolutely.
Than it would have been when he was initially named. Let's go to the DNI appointment of Tulsi Gabbard. A lot of concern being expressed out there because of comments she has made in the past as it relates to Syria and certainly Russia. What do we know about her?
Well, let's start with, again, just sort of your background. I mean, she served about 8 years in the United States Congress as a representative from the great state of Hawaii, but did not serve on the Foreign Relations Committee, the best of my knowledge, Intel Committee. She has no real background in that particular world. Yes, she also spent time in the U.S. military, was in Iraq. I think she may still or recently may have given up a lieutenant colonelcy in the Army Reserve, but again, nothing to do with intelligence services. And again, has no background in running now seven major separate intelligence services and the vast, you know, corporate management requirements for that. But along the way, she was a Democrat, then she became Republican. And along the way, in the war in Iraq, war in Afghanistan, I should say, I'm sorry, began, she initially trumpeted many of the Moscow's talking points that the United States and Ukraine were building chemical and biological factories in Ukraine to strike Russia, all of which was totally untrue. She actually trumpeted those particular comments. And I even saw a clip way back when from Russian television where she actually appeared. And when her interview concluded, one of the Russian commentators said, "My goodness, she just made all of Putin's talking points." She subsequently made a trip to Syria on her own to meet with Bashar al-Assad, the butcher of Syria. So there's a real question right now whether or not Tulsi Gabbard, I think, could pass an FBI check to get a security clearance at a confidential level, which might make leading the intelligence services a little difficult.
One concern I've heard expressed, and I'm curious to get your opinion, because this is your area, for, you know, defense and intelligence. Is it possible that our allies will cease sharing their intel with the United States out of concern of Tulsi Gabbard leading as DNI?
Well, I would say that's absolutely very possible, to say the least, to compromise what we call sources and means. You know, that's one of the big concerns, not just the intelligence that you worry about somebody sharing. It's what that does in terms of compromising agents, what that does in compromising methods. And they would be very, very concerned about that, to say the very least.
Well, we're going to keep an eye on that. Before we let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts. It looks very much like American policy towards support for Ukraine is going to come to an end. What does that mean for that conflict?
Well, you're right. Apparently, there was a big gala at Mar-a-Lago last night, and Mr. Trump made some remarks. And in one of the remarks he apparently made, so reported this morning, was this war in Ukraine has got to come to a close. Obviously, the way to do that and do that quickly, and he said he could do it in 24 hours, though he's never said how, would be to cease U.S. military aid to Ukraine, basically starve their force of the support we give them in ammunition and weapons, and force them to the conference table and force them, frankly, then to accept the terms Mr. Putin has insisted upon. And Putin's been very consistent, oh, by the way, and reiterated in them just the other day that, okay, yeah, we can negotiate once this is, we can negotiate when you accept that these four provinces are actually Russian, number one. Number two, when we neutralize the government in Kyiv, which probably means Zelensky has to go. And number three, when you forego and denounce any possibility of ever joining NATO. Those are his conditions, and you will basically force them to do that. And when you do that, what we've very done a lot, frankly, in terms of international norms, is we said aggression is okay by big states. Big states, big powers do what they want. Small powers do what they can. And that's the law of the jungle, and that's the world we're going back to. So that will be obviously very difficult for Ukraine. Second of all, what I really worry about is the knock-on effect that has on NATO. And, of course, Mr. Trump and those around him have been very, very critical of NATO as an alliance. Mr. Biden's policy obviously was to strengthen NATO, expanded NATO, Finland, Sweden joined the last couple of years. What this does to NATO, because ultimately the Russians, Soviets that I've dealt with for the last 50 years, every Soviet Russian leader since Lenin, well, not really since Lenin, since the NATO was formed, has had as a goal to weaken and ultimately destroy NATO. And so the Russians see Ukraine as obviously part.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
And parcel of that goal as well.
Is there, does Western Europe have enough resources to support the Ukrainian armed military enough to continue to keep this battle going, or is that just not possible?
I don't think they do at the moment, because one thing that occurred in Europe and NATO countries in Europe in the aftermath of the Cold War is they allowed their defense industries really to shrivel in terms of the production of tanks, artillery, ammunition, et cetera. And they became, frankly, more reliant on the United States. I mean, one of the crazy things about the war in Ukraine is we just voted, I think it was $60 billion in military aid. What most Americans don't understand is about 70% of that $60 billion will never leave the United States. It's money that's going to be sent to U.S. defense manufacturers, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Raytheon, et cetera, to purchase weapons. So it's actually great for U.S. industries in many, many ways. Europeans have also become very dependent on our particular industries, and for them to, you know, create and expand dramatically their defense industries in a relatively short period of time is obviously impossible in terms of providing the mass amount of hardware, equipment, ammo that the Ukrainians need, while also trying at the same time to build up their own stockpiles.
Well, we always enjoy the insight. Colonel Jeff McCausland has been our guest. Thanks so much, sir. We'll talk down the road, keep our eyes on what's unfolding before them right here on KMOX.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.